We cross through the gates and head back toward the town square and our hotel.
That thing that Flint said. That's a good way of looking at it. It has to be okay, so it will be. I'm gonna steal that for when I'm freaked out about something.
You mean you aren't freaked out about someone literally banking on our death?
Not really. I figured you and Hudson had everything under control.
That's a bit of a stretch, but I admire the vote of confidence.
Hudson doesn't say anything, but he does take my hand and lace our fingers together. Hudson slash Grace shorthand for, we've got this.
Let's head back to the hotel. Maybe Niaz has started his shift by now.
Not to mention my bed is calling my name. No wonder you never had time to text me back while you were at Katmere, Grace. Your life is exhausting.
You have no idea. But I still should have texted you back.
When? In between wrangling with gods and bargaining with smugglers?
She shakes her head.
Nope. I officially declare you get a pass for everything that happened before.
I start to make a joke, but I'm too choked up to say anything. Because it's just like Heather to let me off easy. Even though she probably shouldn't.
Yeah, well, from now on, I'll make sure to text no matter how dangerous the situation. In fact, expect nothing short of fawning attention.
Well, I always love a good fawning.
Eden raises a brow.
Is that your philosophy on all things, or just friendship?
And on that note, I start walking faster. Some things I don't need to know, even about my bestie. But speaking of besties, I pull my hand from Hudson's, and he gives me a surprised look. At least until I jerk my chin surreptitiously toward Macy, who is walking a little in front of us, head bowed and hands in her pockets. She wasn't paying attention to Eden or Heather, so whatever this is, it's not about them. Hudson nods and drops back to let Jackson and Flint hassle him some more about being a superhero. On the plus side, at least the two of them aren't fighting about anything when they have the common goal of messing with Hudson. Hudson can more than hold his own, though, so I hurry to catch up with my cousin. I gently bump her shoulder with mine.
How's it going?
Apparently well, since we aren't going to be trapped here forever after all.
It's definitely one of many things to be thankful for.
Of course. I'm betting that whatever that polo guy was referring to kills us on the way out regardless.
She slides me a weak smile to let me know she's kidding. Sort of.
Hey, we got this. Besides, that's not what I meant. You still have things and people to be thankful for, Macy. You know that, right?
I know.
But she doesn't say anything more. I let a couple of minutes of silence pass before I try again.
If you want to talk about...
I don't.
Okay, then. Maybe want was too strong a word. What I meant...
I know what you meant, Grace.
She shoots me another small smile that almost makes it to her eyes. I just love you, Mace.
I know. Love you, too.
Whatever you need, I'm here. Hey, you had my back when I first arrived at Katmere, remember, Rumi?
A tiny spark starts to flicker in her eyes, so I push ahead. Maybe I should buy you a hot pink comforter. This time, a half smile lifts one side of her mouth, and I sling an arm around her neck. With sparkles and sequins and maybe even a feather fringe. For a second or two, she stays tense as hell, but then slowly, so slowly I barely feel it, she lets her guard down a tiny bit. I wish I had just the right thing to say to her to get her to open up. I know she's in a rough spot. No, she's hurting. And I know from experience, you can't just go around pain. Eventually, you have to wade through it. But it's not my right to tell her when that should happen. It's hers. Still, she deserves to know she doesn't have to walk through it on her own.
You'll find your way through this, Macy. On your terms.
But I need you to know you are not alone. I'm here for you. Pink comforter and all. Eventually, she nods, bending her head to the side so that she can rest her cheek on the top of my head.
I know.
She pulls away. It's not a lot, but I hope it's enough for now. Hope she knows that I've got her, no matter what. We make it to the town square a couple, and though it's past midnight, there are people everywhere. Eating in sidewalk cafes, shopping in stores that have stayed open late, listening to music in the center of the square. It's obvious Starfall is coming. The street lamps are decorated with colorful purple flower baskets,
and food tents are starting to set up downtown. For a second, I consider suggesting hanging out in the square and listening to music for a while. But I think that's just the memories getting to me. I can't believe I forgot Hudson sitting in front of the crowd. It's got to be one of my top 10 favorite moments from our time here. Hudson nods toward the picture window of the inn.
Niaz is at the front desk. Want to try and catch him now?
Absolutely. We need to make sure we can find the Shadow Queen. Because if we can't, the whole plan falls apart. Hudson turns to the others.
You can head upstairs if you want. Get some sleep while we figure out if this is going to work.
And miss out on all of this?
Flint nods toward the way people keep getting closer and closer to us, as if being in the same general area as Hudson will make him fall in love with them. Or at least get him to offer up a picture, or 20.
I'm just waiting for one of them to work up the nerve to approach you. Once that happens, I'm betting you'll end up at the bottom of a dog pile before the night is over.
Your concern for me is overwhelming.
I just call them like I see them, and I'm definitely not missing it.
We head to the inn, where we're met at the door by a grinning Niaz.
Out showing your friends the pre-Starfall activities, I see, Hudson.
I took them to the Midnight Market. And the Mark.
Niaz's smile grows even wider as he turns to the rest of us.
The Mark is my oldest son's favorite place. Did you enjoy it?
Loved it. The whole town is idyllic.
We work hard to keep it that way.
He ushers us to the array of empty tables at the small restaurant in the corner of the lobby.
So, I hear you need some help with something. How can I be of service?
Niaz waves down the lone employee in the place.
Hey, can you get some drinks and some pachos and spicy onion rings for our guests?
Sure.
Once that's done and he's settled into the empty chair near Jackson, I just dive right in. Arnst told us you might know where the Shadow Queen's secret fortress is located. His eyebrows shoot up as his shoulders stiffen.
Why in the world would you want another encounter with the Shadow Queen?
We have business to conduct with her. No fighting this time.
Well, that's unfortunate. She has several fortresses spread around the realm, and we never know which one she's residing in. I don't know if you're aware, but there's a bit of civil unrest in Noramor, with a rogue faction sending assassins to kill the Queen.
That's why she's in hiding, right? Because of the attempts on her life? We heard a rumor.
And the disquiet through much of Noramor. She hasn't made life as pleasant in the rest of the Shadow Realm as it is in Vegaville. So most wraiths elsewhere want the curse ended so they can leave.
He shrugs like he can't fathom it.
I don't know why they don't just come here. Or turn their own towns into a place like this.
I'm not sure a cushy place to live is enough to placate people who want freedom, but what do I know? Niaz knows the wraiths here way better than I ever will.
What do you suggest a person do to get her attention, then? To lure her from her fortress?
The innkeeper blinks at us for several seconds.
No way. You are not asking my advice on how to bring the Shadow Queen down on this town again, are you? We've barely recovered from the last time that monster was here. And now you want to bring her back? I can't let you do that, Hudson.
Hey, believe me, no one wants to tangle with that bitch less than we do.
Heather holds up her hands in a don't shoot the messenger stance.
True.
Yep.
We don't have a choice. And no, we have no interest in provoking her enough to make her attack Addery. That's definitely not the end goal here. We just need to talk to her. And if we can get her attention, I believe we can make her an offer she'll actually be interested in accepting. And all without fighting.
Niaz crosses his arms over his chest and gives us a very unimpressed look.
How do you plan to do that?
The goal is to get her attention. On us, not on Addery.
I still don't see why you would want to do that. She wants to kill your man.
I don't have the energy to tell him that she'll probably want to kill me equally as much if she ever remembers me. So I look to Hudson to explain, since he's the only one here who Niaz trusts. As Hudson explains more of our problem to the innkeeper, I rack my brain for a non-aggressive reason to bring her out of hiding. After Hudson's explanation, Niaz shakes his head again.
I'll admit, you might be the only thing the Queen desires more than freeing the Shadow Realm, Hudson. I believe she would come out of hiding if she knew where to find you. Of course, that won't happen here. We have False Hudson sightings weekly because the townspeople are so eager for your return, so one more rumored return likely won't get her attention in the slightest.
Good lord, he's like Elvis.
He's just a hunk of burning love.
Here you are.
The waitress arrives with a heavy tray loaded with our drinks, and Hudson jumps up to help her, which makes her blush, and she nearly drops the entire tray on Macy's head. Eventually, we get the drinks sorted out and sip our waters in silence. I set my glass down and roll my eyes.
Come on, people. We need ideas. Chop, chop.
Immediately, everyone starts tossing out suggestions. The wildest being the gang doing a flyby and tagging her statue in the palace gardens with spray paint. I'll admit, that one would be hilarious. But I'm not sure it would put her in the right mood for a calm discussion. It's not until Macy leans over to me and points out the window that a real plan begins to formulate. Reaching into my pocket, I pull out the card I'd taken in jest earlier. I've got an idea.
Oh yeah?
I turn to Hudson. How's your voice feeling?
My voice?
But then his eyes fall on the card on the table, and the wariness turns to full-blown alarm.
Oh, fuck no, Grace.
Jackson has obviously already caught on to the idea.
Dude, that's fucking perfect.
I'm not doing it.
Hudson crosses his arms over his chest and goes so far as to look in the other direction from me. Pretending I'm not here isn't going to make the idea go away, you know. Especially not when it's this good.
It's not good. It's bloody terrible.
Actually, it's bloody perfect.
Can someone fill me in on what's so good slash terrible?
The waitress brings out our food. It smells delicious. And as she puts everything on the table, I realize that I haven't eaten a real meal since breakfast. Everyone else must be feeling it too, because Flint, Eden, Heather, and Macy dig into the pachos and punyon pings with gusto. A concert promoter wants to put on a widely publicized concert during Starfall with Hudson. Macy grins.
And there is no one more equipped to make a boomer stand up and pay attention than thousands of teenage girls.
Hudson Vega, hate on tour.
That's got a nice ring to it.
Excuse me? Hudson isn't a hater, but Jackson is on a roll.
Hudson Vega, no wonder tour. Hudson Vega, who needs eras when you've got centuries? Hudson Vega, I have no faith in the future tour.
Even Hudson is looking affronted now, but I've finally caught on to what Jackson is doing. You can make fun of him all you want, but you're the big, bad, dark, and broody vampire who knows the names of all the huge pop tours going around at the moment.
So that's what that was.
Shawn Mendes, Taylor Swift, Louis Tomlinson, Harry Styles. I tick them off on my fingers. Making fun of my mate and Harry all in the same sentence? He's lucky I'm on my best behavior right now. I mean, it's no, of course you don't remember Darren Hayes for Savage Garden Tour, but whatever.
Wait, he's touring?
Jackson whips out his phone before he realizes it doesn't work here.
Oh, slick, Grace. Very slick.
Anyway, it's a good idea, Hudson.
It's a great idea. You'll sell out the place, and she can't help but notice.
Especially if we make the publicity a condition of the concert. You know, like those contract writer stars attached to their appearances. Hudson will only perform if they can publicize the concert all over Norrmalm.
And only if it's outside of Attery. Excuse me? Vegaville. So that Niaz and the people of Attery feel safe.
I can get behind that. My underground network can get the word out too. Make it even harder for her to miss.
That's brilliant! When we talk to the concert promoter, we can see if that will work for him too.
It'll have to work for him. Especially if he wants this as badly as he says he does.
So, we've got a plan then? Grace will contact the concert promoter with Hudson's demands. Niaz will use his network to help get the word out. The rest of us will organize the concert venue and Hudson...
Oh yes, please, enlighten me. What is it exactly that Hudson will be doing while all this is going on?
To her credit, Heather doesn't so much as blink. She just looks him straight in the eye and smiles.
Putting together a kick-ass set list, obviously. The talent has to pull his weight, you know.
When Hudson smiles back at her, there's a little more fang showing than I would normally be comfortable with. Then again, we are asking an awful lot of him. Look, I know we're asking a lot of you. He turns that two-fingy smile on me.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Asking something of me? Well, here I was, under the impression that I was being told what to do.
And apparently the vampire prince slash gargoyle king slash alpha male that is my mate is not particularly fond of being told what to do. Who would have guessed? It's the best idea we've got to get her to come to us. Mikai can't wait much longer. You know that, right? He frowns.
I know.
And you're going to be great. You know that too, right?
Maybe.
So what's the problem? Just take one for the team, bro.
Hudson's eyes narrow to slits.
You keep calling this a team, but I'm the one who has to keep taking the hits for it. You want to explain that to me?
Dude, there was a pigeon on my head. You didn't hear me whining this much.
There was a pigeon on your head because you're an asshole who can't keep his fucking mouth shut. It's not precisely the same thing.
Oh, boo-hoo. The entire fucking Shadow Realm wants to see you in concert, Hudson. They love you so much, they built statues to you and renamed an entire town after you. How will you go on?
What if they don't?
He mumbles so quietly that I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who heard him. And the last of the pieces clicks into place. Is that what you're worried about? That no one will come to see you sing?
I'm not a singer, Grace. Why on earth would anyone actually pay money to hear me sing?
I clasp his hand between both of mine. Oh, babe. They're going to come.
You don't know that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I do. I put a finger on the side of his chin and turn his head so that he can see what Macy pointed out to me earlier. Namely, that the entire sidewalk in front of Nyaz's Inn is crowded with little teenage girls pressing up against the glass. All dressed in different variations of I Heart Hudson Vega shirts and jackets and scrunchies and earrings. They're going to come. I think the only problem will be mitigating disappointment when the tickets sell out.
Little do they know they're signing on to listen to 90 minutes of vintage British invasion.
Annoyance at all his little digs reaches the flashpoint inside me, and I round on him with a look that shuts everyone at the table up. Even him. You know what? I think I've finally figured out what you can do. You've got so much to say about Hudson and this concert, then fine. It just went from a solo act to a duo. Brother bands are huge.
What? No way. I am not doing that.
Oh, you are doing it. The Vega Brothers has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
This is bullshit. I can't even sing.
Yes, you can. You have an amazing voice.
Jackson shoots him a look that would have decimated a lesser man. Come on, Jackson. Isn't it your turn to take one for the team, bro?
I'm pretty sure I've already done that, considering I'm the last member of the Order still standing.
His tone is so snide that Flint reels back in his chair like someone hit him. Yes, you have lost a lot. I walk over to his side of the table. But look around, will you? So has everyone else sitting at this table, except maybe Heather. But she's new here, so give her a little time. Flint lost his leg. Hudson lost the girl he loved for years to his brother, not to mention nearly losing his sanity in the frozen gargoyle court. We've all lost something or someone, but we're still here, still fighting to make sure you are not the last member of the Order still standing. So get off the pity train, stop riding your brother's ass so hard, and get on board. Otherwise, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Total silence greets my words as every person at the table stares at me like they can't believe what I just said. To be honest, I can't believe it myself. I'm not usually the one to go off on someone like that, especially not Jackson, whom I adore beyond measure. But this time, he had it coming. We've all suffered. We've all been hurt. Just because he and Flint are going through whatever the hell they're going through right now doesn't give him the right to take it out on the rest of us. Still, we can't all sit here staring at each other forever, so I try to figure out what to say to get things moving again.
Fine. But I get to be the cool Vega brother. He can be the nerdy one.
Well, obviously, you're the eye candy. I quote the concert promoter, reaching down to squeeze Jackson's hand in thanks for turning things around.
His hair better not upstage me.
And that quickly, it feels like we're back on track. I mean, sure, it may be riddled with potholes and bumpy as hell, but we're on it. For now, that'll have to be good enough. We need this moment of levity and confidence for all of us. This feeling that we can do anything as long as we do it together. Because the one thing nobody seems willing to even consider yet is the fact that we're about to lure a hungry tiger out of its cage with a juicy piece of meat. And we really think it'll want to chat with us before it pounces and rips out our jugulars? Our meeting with Niaz winds down a few minutes later, and we all make our way to our rooms. As soon as Hudson and I open the door to ours, Smokey races straight for us. She slams into Hudson at a dead run, then scurries up his leg and torso until she's sitting on his chest.
Yes, go on. Oh, okay.
Hudson nods and smiles like he understands every word of her story. And she ends up finishing with a flourish that makes both of them grin. Then she reaches up and pats both his cheeks with her little hands before hightailing it out the door and down the hall. Should we go after her? She's kind of young to be on her own in a new town.
She's okay. She's just going to feed and run around a little. She'll be back in a couple of hours.
I stare at him. You couldn't possibly have gotten that from what she told you. You don't actually speak Umbra.
I don't. But I've gotten very adept at understanding certain noises that she makes at certain times, including the one for food.
I start to ask him what that noise is, then decide he probably has no desire to try to imitate the little Umbra at the moment. Also, I have no desire to hear him imitate her. Not when my entire being is craving sleep like my life depends on it. I'm going to take a shower. Will you order me something from room service before they close? I got so worked up downstairs that I didn't eat much.
I noticed.
He runs a hand over my curls.
Anything particular you want?
Food.
I just need fuel and to make my stomach stop growling. One quick shower and a few bites of Addery's version of a grilled cheese later, I'm drawing the blackout curtains and crawling into bed. Hudson joins me, still slightly damp from his own shower. I don't care. When he reaches for me, I go, rolling over until I'm straddling him, my knees around his hips.
Grace.
He threads his hands through my hair and gently pulls me down for a kiss. And then we're rolling again until I'm on the bottom and he's on top, propped up on his elbows and staring down at me with eyes so intense, it almost hurts to look at them. Go ahead. I lift my chin and tilt my head back so that he can take what I so desperately want to give. He doesn't answer, doesn't say anything at all. But his hand moves to rest on my collarbone, and his fingers softly stroke the pulse point at the base of my neck. His eyes are darker now, the deep blue of his irises nearly obscured by his blown-out pupils. I can sense the hunger in him, can feel it clawing at him from the inside. But still he watches me. Still he doesn't move except for the fingers slowly, oh so slowly, sliding back and forth against my vein. Go ahead. And when that still doesn't work, I run my hands up his lean, muscular back and tangle my fingers in the short, cool silk of his hair. I try to tug him closer, but he doesn't budge so much an inch. Instead, he stays exactly where he is, eyes and skin and hair gleaming in the dim light of the bedside lamp. And as he stares down at me, mouth open just enough that I can see the tip of his fangs where they rest against his lush lower lip, I can feel the same hunger in his eyes beating inside me as well. Hudson. The ache grows and grows, taking me over, making me want, making me need, making me desperate to have him in any way, in all the ways. Please. I arch against him.
Please what?
There's a wickedness in his tone that somehow has the desperation burning even hotter inside me. Do it. I need... Then he's striking, his fangs sinking deep into my skin. Pleasure slams through me as he drinks and drinks and drinks. And I never want it to end. My hands clutch at him, pulling him closer. My body wraps around him, cradling him in place. And my veins light up like a Mardi Gras parade, noise and chaos and joy tearing through me with every sip he takes.
More. More, more, more.
I feel his lips curve against the sensitive skin of my neck right before he starts to drink more deeply, more ravenously. I give myself up to him, to this, offering everything inside me for his pleasure and mine. More is a chant deep inside me. More, more, more. But this is Hudson, my Hudson, and his concern for me will always trump his own pleasure. And he's pulling back way too soon.
No.
I clutch at him, but he's not having it. He holds me tighter, though, lets his tongue linger on his bite mark as he slowly, carefully seals it up. Then he's sliding down my body, leaving a burning trail of kisses wherever his mouth touches. A flash of fang, a tug of fingers, and my panties disappear. Then he's sliding up my body again, moving slow and purposeful. He pauses, catching my gaze with those heavy-lidded eyes and blown-out pupils that somehow only make him hotter.
Okay.
More, please. More, more, more.
He grins and leans down to kiss me in a way that has everything inside me trembling toward ecstasy. I clutch at his shoulders even as I arch against him. And then he's giving me everything I've begged for and more as he takes me higher and higher. Until there's just him and me and the inferno that rages between us, growing hotter and wilder and more all-consuming with every moment that passes. My eyes flutter open and I bask in the sexy warmth of his gaze as he stares down at me. I smile back, reaching up to run a finger along his sexy lower lip.
I love you. I love you so much.
My grace.
It's a plea as much as it's a demand, and there's only one answer I can give.
Yes.
Eventually, he gets up and turns off the lamp, cracks a window for Smokey so she has a way back in, locks the door, and grabs a bottle of water from the mini fridge as I watch him with sleepy eyes.
Here.
He hands me the water as he climbs back into bed.
You need to drink.
I think you just like bossing me around. I crack the water.
Yeah, well, I've got to take advantage of it while I can, considering this is the only time you let me.
Please. You'd be bored if I made it too easy for you.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He pulls the covers over us. Then he rolls over so that he can wrap himself around me, because he always knows exactly what I need. Most nights, he's the little spoon and I'm the big spoon. Being on the outside helps keep my anxiety from rearing its ugly head when I'm asleep. But tonight, I'm worried, really worried. And the feel of Hudson wrapped around me makes it seem like everything is okay, even if my brain is telling me otherwise. But sometimes the illusion of security is all you've got. And as I finally drift off to sleep, I tell myself that no matter what happens next, everything is going to be okay. Now, if only I could get myself to believe it.
Crave, Book 6, Cherish, Part 1 of 2 by Tracy Wolfe is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2023 by Tracy Wolfe. All rights reserved, including the right to reproduce, distribute, or transmit in any form or by any means. Recorded by arrangement with Entangled Publishing, LLC. Copyright 2025 Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. Narrated by Melody Muse as Grace, Stuart Crank as Hudson, Anthony Palmini as Flint, Wynn Delano as Jackson, Sarah Matsui-Colby as Eden, Kaya Freites as Heather, Sora Sue as Lorelei, Yenny Ann as Macy, and Christopher Tester as Jakan. Also with Karen Novak, Peter Holdway, Eva Wilhelm, Gabriel Michael, Charlie Albers, Tia Shearer, Eric Messner, Rita Amparita, Julian Daly, Lamont Ridgel, John Vertulo, Matthew Pauly, Aaron Lynn, Danny Montooth, Laura C. Harris, Damon Allums, Matthew Bassett, Debbie Tinsley, Alexandra Kohler, and Nora Ashradi. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Eric Messner. Dialogue editing by Molly Creerand.
Graphic audio sound design and original music by Justin Rohde.
Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you've enjoyed Crave, Book 6, Cherish, Part 1 by Tracy Wolfe, you might also enjoy The Four Horsemen, Book 1, Pestilence by Laura Thalassa, or The Zodiac Academy, Book 1, The Awakening by Caroline Peckham and Suzanne Valenti. All these titles and many more are now available at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening to hear a sample clip from The Four Horsemen, Book 1, Pestilence by Laura Thalassa.
It's been a long day. The horseman's wet hair drips between us. In rivulets of water cut down his chest, I feel a rush of heat at the side of his bare skin. The firelight caresses every dip and curve, and not for the first time I notice the exquisiteness of his form. His high cheekbones and full lips look all the more extreme as the shadows dance along them. And then there's the rest of him, which is also so distinctly male, from his sculpted, powerful shoulders to his thick-cut biceps. My eyes drop to his chest, where his rounded pecs flow into rippling abs. But it's impossible to look at his torso without noticing the strange, glowing marks that shimmer in the darkness, illuminating the surrounding skin. I reach out and run my fingers over the letters that curve beneath his collarbones like a necklace. They glow with a golden fire, their form strange and beautiful. Beneath my touch, Pestilence's skin jumps. He holds very still, letting me explore his body. What are these? It's obvious it's writing, but it's a language unlike anything I've ever seen. He stares down at me, his eyes bright.
My purpose, written into flesh.
The horseman places a hand over mine, effectively trapping it against one of the symbols. Steering my hand with his, he has me trace the marking.
This one means divinely ordained.
He releases his grip. I raise my eyebrows at him before my attention drops back to his chest. I move my hand over several characters, stopping on one that lays to the left of his heart. And this one?
Breath of God.
I trace the word. Beneath my touch, Pestilence's skin pebbles. What language is this?
A holy one.
His eyes are on me, tracking my movements. If I had a little more courage, my hand would drop lower, where another band of characters ring his hips, the lowest of the symbols dipping well beneath his towel. But alas, my courage fails me. Can you speak it? His hand presses over mine once more, holding my palm against his heart.
Sarah, it is my native tongue.
I stare at the writing, wondrously. I feel a presence here in this dark room. It presses in close. I can see it in the back of the horseman's steady gaze, and I can feel it in the very beat of his heart. My gaze lifts to his. Say something for me. His eyes shine.
I can't. To speak the holy language is to press divine will upon the world.
I pull my hand away, removing myself from him. Isn't that what you're already doing? How else am I supposed to interpret Pestilence riding across the world and spreading his plague? He leans forward, looking lupin and feral as he comes in close.
What is spoken cannot be unheard. It is not for mortal ears. But I am not above sharing a word or two with you.
I forget to breathe as his own breath fans against my cheeks, his lips,
and the rest of his nearly unclad body so very, very close. Just when I think he's going to share one of these sacred words.
Go back to sleep. I will watch over you.
I don't want to sleep. Not when I still feel the press of his supple skin beneath my fingers, marked with figures strange and holy. I'm unbearably lonely, my body aching at the lack of a partner, and damn it all, but the partner it wants is him. I want him, all of him, in me, around me, next to me, filling my mind, my body, my life. And that's so many different kinds of fucked up, and I'm so over it, so over feeling torn. Pestilence stands, backing away into the darkened recesses of the house. I nearly call out to him. It would be so easy to coax him towards me, to remove that towel and pull him down and feel his weight settle on me. To my shame, it isn't my loyalty to humankind that stops me from calling him back. It's the deep fear that he'll refuse my advances. There's only so many shitty things a girl can take in a single day.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind. On the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.